book of Genesis, chapter 13. It's a really fascinating story, as are most of the stories in the Bible, at least to me. But this one is a doozy. So Abram, it says, went from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into Negev. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and in gold. He journeyed on by stages from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them living together. For their possessions were so great that they could not live together. And there was strife between the herders of Abram's livestock and the herders of Lot's livestock at the time the Canaanites and the Perizzites lived in the land. Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herders and my herders, for we are kindred. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot looked about him and saw that the plain of the Jordan was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the plain of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. And Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the plain and moved his tent as far as Sodom. So we're talking about relationships. We're talking about relationship. Relationships stand at the heart of the story of God. The story of God is a story about God's relationship with humans and humans' relationship with one another. And throughout time, relationships have become more complex and convoluted and, dare I say, complicated. If you have any familiarity with social media, particularly Facebook, you might be aware of the "it's complicated" tag. It has to do with the relationship status. When you're setting up your profile, you have the option to tell the entire world your relationship status. You can click and display that you're single or in a relationship or that you're married, or you can put "it's complicated" when it comes to your relationship status. You can actually put "it's complicated." And I believe now there's like 16, 18 different options that you can put there now. Now, our relationships are complicated because we are complex beings with complex emotions. Hence the screen behind me with all the emojis. That is what relationships will do. They will bring out all types of emotions. That should be expected, as we have been created with all of these emotions and created to be around one another, and we've been created to interact with one another and created sometimes to make each other laugh and to make each other cry and to make each other angry and to make each other roll our eyes or make each other feel cared for. These are the emotions that we have been created with by a creator who created this unique and complex being that's called human. This is the human experience, and it is flooded with everything relationship. And since it comes with everything, we must contend with the fact that in relationships, there will be conflict. There will be conflict. When I do premarital counseling with couples, there is a whole session on conflict, because as long as there are people who do life together, there will come a time where there will be conflict. Now, confession here. if you have been attending this church for a long time, you know that I absolutely, undeniably, and unquestionably hate conflict. I want people to get along. I want people to live in peace and serenity. Conflict just messes things up. But if we take our cue from creation, it is evident that conflict is going to be a part of the human existence, the human experience, or what some people call the human experiment. I mean, think about it. The Lord creates the heavens and the earth and this vast universe and everything that is in it, everything that is on it, beneath it, above it. He creates humans. It's this paradise where everything is great. You know, I like to say Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden. They had no care. They had no worry. They were living what I like to call ghetto fabulous. It was wonderful in the Garden of Eden. God says, man, you do whatever you want with this, except eat from this one tree. And of course, I mean, spoiler alert, they eat from the tree and thus set up the first instance of conflict after the creation. It came to pass that as a result of them disobeying God and not following what God had called them to do or asked them to do, don't eat from that tree, they were expelled from this paradise, this garden, and then they began to have children, and Adam and Eve, the first humans, had kids. They had two sons, one named Cain and one named Abel. And Cain and Abel were offering sacrifices to God. It says that Cain offered some vegetables, some things from the ground. He worked on the ground. But Abel, he tended sheep, and he offered some sheep and lambs to God. And the text says that God didn't receive Cain's offering. I didn't give the exact reason. And then it says he did receive Abel. Now, you would think that Cain would have an issue with God, but he didn't have an issue with God. He had an issue with his brother. And spoiler alert, it doesn't end well. Cain goes to his brother, invites him out into the field, and he kills his brother. Conflict with family. From the very beginning, we have witnessed conflict. Those of you who have children have probably witnessed arguments and maybe even had the fleeting thought from time to time that my kid is going to kill the other kid. They're going to kill their sister. They're going to kill their brother. And what's so fascinating about these arguments between our siblings, I have two daughters, so I have witnessed one or two fights between my two daughters, one or 2,000 fights between my two daughters. And what's so fascinating about these arguments is that they're usually about nothing. I've watched my two daughters in a car argue for an hour over the color of the sky. I've watched them argue over like which is the better song in High School Musical. Is it 77 degrees or 78 degrees? It's 78 degrees. No, it's 77. Mom, Dad, which is it? Just arguments. And I've had that fleeting thought. They're really going to kill each other over the weather. Conflict. The stories that we have preserved for us in the Bible are full of conflict stories. They might not be as medial as some of the conflict I have witnessed with kids, you know, the Brown family. Conflict over the who gets the front seat is a popular fight with the Brown family. Might not be as trivial as that, but the Bible is full of conflict stories. Adam and Eve with God, Cain and Abel. There was this guy named Lamech who vowed to settle conflicts by being even more murderous than Cain. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 4, verse number 23. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, listen to me, wives of Lamech. Hear my words. This was a song. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. He vowed to be even more murderous. The way I'm going to handle conflict is I'm going to murder everyone in my wake. Noah, who built the ark, had conflict with his son Ham. Sarah had conflict with the handmaid Hagar. Isaac had conflict with Rebekah over their sons. Jacob had conflict with his twin brother Esau. Joseph had conflict with 10 of his brothers. Israel had conflict with the Philistines. Judah, the southern kingdom, had conflict with Israel, the northern kingdom. There is no escaping conflict. Now, let's briefly revisit the text I read earlier. It is a text describing the early days of Abraham when his name was Abram. And with Abram is a guy by the name of Lot. Now, Lot wasn't just anyone. Lot was Abram's nephew. Now, there's not a lot of info on Lot. We're introduced to Abram in the latter part of chapter 11. And in chapter 12, that's where we read about Abram being called by God to follow the Lord, to establish his new nation, this new people. But there is some interesting info in the latter part of chapter 11 that might be helpful in understanding this relationship between Abram and Lot. In chapter 11, verse number 27, it says, "Now these are the descendants of Terah." Terah was the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran was the father of Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldeans. That's Genesis 11, 27 and 28. And then drop it down to verse number 31 in chapter 11. It says, "Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there." Now, I suspect the relationship between Abram and Lot. Now, Abram was his uncle. Abram was Lot's uncle. I suspect that was probably a close one. I know many who have grown up in similar situations where grandparents care for their grandkids alongside their own children. And while Abram was Lot's uncle, it may be that they were more like brothers. I had a similar situation. My brother had a child, and he went away to go to the correctional officer training, and he moved away downstate. He was not married to the mother, and she went away to become a state trooper. And so my mother had the care of my daughter's, or my brother's daughter, my niece. And I was in high school, and she was a little bit younger than me. And while she was my niece, we kind of were like brother and sister. I was the youngest. I never had a young sibling before. And for the first time, I was kind of like big brother. Yeah, she called me Uncle Dion, but we were more like brother and sister. They grew up together, Abram and Lot. The affection that they had for one another and the bond that they had with one another had to be a strong, strong bond. But like all relationships, every relationship, there comes conflict. Both Abram and Lot were rich men. Wealth in those days was measured by the amount of livestock and gold and silver that you possessed and your servants. But Lot and Abram had plenty, and so much, in fact, the word says that the land could not support both of them. It's an interesting description. Like, what does that mean? Well, livestock need land to graze and feed and birth more livestock. And it just wasn't enough room for both men's possessions. It was a space issue and a resource issue. And there's an interesting line that grabbed my attention in Genesis chapter 13 and verse number 6, where it says, "For their possessions were so great that they could not live together." It got me wondering. It got me wondering about all the things that we possess that make it hard to live together. You know, do we possess so much stuff that we can't stand other people to have stuff? And it just make it hard to live together. Probably one of the reasons why the Bible talks so much about jealousy and and coveting other people's stuff, because there just comes this situation where they got all their stuff, they got all our stuff. Instead of just being content with the stuff that we have, like we want their stuff, or we think they have too much stuff, or we want to compete so that we have better stuff. And it just causes conflict. We possess so much stuff that we can't live together. Do we possess such a strong, here it comes again, church. Do we possess a strong political identity that it just makes it hard for us to live with each other or exist with one another? Again, I keep bringing up Facebook because Facebook has become the place where this question is a very important question to ask. Because I have watched people of differing political ideologies just simply say, yeah, I just can't do this anymore. I'm unfriending everybody who don't think like me. Do we possess too many grudges that make it hard for us to live together? We've interacted with friends and family and church members, and man, that person did this to me, and guess what? I just really can't do life with them because I possess so many grudges. Do we possess an unwillingness to accept people who might think different, eat different, or speak different, and it makes us hard, makes it really hard for us to live together? You know, in the city of Reynoldsburg, in the past 20 years, this community has become richly diverse, ethnically, racially, religiously, socioeconomically, and I'm a part of a couple city groups, and it's amazing the way that some people talk about other people because they don't look like them. Phrases like, I cannot believe all these people are moving to my town. These people are taking over this city. These people? Do we possess so much junk that it makes it hard for us to live together? It was their great possessions, Adam or Abram and Lot, that caused them to determine that it was going to be hard for them to live together. The text says in verse number 7 of chapter 13, there was strife between the herders of Abram's livestock and the herders of Lot's livestock. And so the conflict really was a matter of those taking care of all of Lot's stuff and all the people taking care of Abram's stuff. And it probably was like, man, we can't share the space and we need to graze here. No, we need to graze here. We were here first. And so let's give some credit, some kudos to Abram, because he identified this situation as potentially a combustible situation, something that was going to explode. And guess what? Him, Abram, and Lot, man, they're close. And rather than living or commencing a turf war that could have led to bloodshed over stuff, Abram said to Lot, "Look, we're family, man. Let's settle this peaceably so that all parties involved are well off." And so Abram offers to Lot for him to take his choice of land. Abram said, "You go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the left, if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. We don't want this to end bad. Just take your pick." And of course, Lot looks and he sees this green space, this plush space. He takes that and he goes and takes that, and Abram goes in the opposite direction. Seems to be a reasonable solution to an otherwise potentially explosive situation and a breakdown in a relationship between family members. Now, sadly, in this area, we have seen many examples that didn't end so well. Numerous stories of family members who couldn't come to peaceable solutions and situations, and they ended tragically. I'm talking siblings that murdered one another, or children that murdered their parents. And we're inundated with examples of conflict that didn't end in bloodshed, but it did result in heartache and despair. I remember years and years ago, one of the first funerals I ever preached, I remember I was at the hospital in a hospice room with a dying woman, and here this woman was. She couldn't even communicate because she was so heavily medicated, and they were just waiting for her to die. And the siblings of this, the children of this dear woman, I remember them coming in, and we learned very quickly that these two siblings hadn't talked in years over something that took place years and years and years ago. And I remember one of the siblings taking a box of the mother's jewelry and pouring it on the bed, and they began to argue over who was going to get different pieces of jewelry. Church members and groups are known to be the subjects of some mean and nasty conflict, resulting in church splits and men and women leaving the church for good. And in most instances, the issue at the source of the conflict is so trivial. It has become a running joke that churches argue over the color of the carpet. But there are churches that literally have split because of the color of the carpet. So why was Abram's and Lot's conflict different? Let me offer you at least three observations I made why their conflict was different. Number one, Abram and Lot understood that blood is thicker than our differences. Humans are connected. We all come from the same source. We're all blood related. Obviously, some of us are more related than others. If we can't come to an understanding that from one couple, Adam and Eve, we have all come, then we will have a problem understanding how deep our connection really is. We are of the same. We share the same blood. We share the same origin. We may have different shapes and colors and religions and favorite sports teams. But what is common is stronger than what is different. Our common story as humans is more alike than it is different. We breathe the same air. We all need food and water. We all want to be loved and accepted by others. And we all are sinners. We all are broken, and we all need the touch of Jesus. Church, we are more connected than we are divided. Why was Abram and Lot's conflict different? Because Abram and Lot took some time to deliberate carefully the situation. There was no rush to a decision or action. Usually when we act before we think or talk or pray, we make rash decisions that often lead to damaging situations. Later in this series, we're going to talk about our mouths and the things we say that are so hurtful that impede conflict resolution. Thankfully, Abram and Lot talked things out and developed a strategy that would not break their family bond. What would have happened if they waited until the herdsmen began to fight with each other to try to come up with a solution? They may have come up with a solution, but after they cleaned up the dead bodies. Why was Abram and Lot's conflict different? Because Abram and Lot, number three, they understood that peace between them would help broker peace between those connected to them. Check out this interesting tidbit in the text in Genesis chapter 13 and verse number 8. Listen again to what Abram said to Lot. He said, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and let there be no strife between your herders and my herders, for we are kindred, we're brothers, we're related." One of the reasons I believe it is so important that we rescue our understanding of relationship from the grips of the world and social media is because our relationships with one another will have implications on how the world relates to one another. I know that's a tall task and it comes with a great deal of responsibility. But remember, God tasked the first union, humans, and dare I say all humans, God gave this task to humans to be good stewards of the earth. I want you to have dominion. I want you to take care of the earth. That means not just the plants and the animals, but one another. And the way we act with one another, treat one another, forgive one another, resolve conflicts with one another, and love one another will influence the people around us. Perhaps the way we approach peace in our immediate relationships will influence the peace we so desire in our communities, in our country, and in our world. How can the church speak about peace and conflict resolution to our community, to a world that is just wrecked with war, when we're at war with one another? The world looking at us saying, what? You want us to get along and you're fighting over carpet? The church is no stranger to conflict. We have a history. This church, I'm talking, is no stranger to conflict. This church, the Reynoldsburg Church, has a history concerning issues that have divided us. In the past, conflict over decisions, ideologies, and practices have caused clashes between brothers and sisters. Some have left this congregation. Some have remained. For some, the wounds of the conflict are so great that reconciliation has not taken place. But for some, I'm happy to report, not only has that reconciliation taken place, but brand new narratives have been written. I remember years ago sitting in a room with two brothers who were at each other's throats over an issue, and it just kept coming up and coming up, and it just seemed like there was no resolution. But years later, I watched these two brothers drive off in the same vehicle as one of the brothers committed to helping to serve this brother as he battled an illness. I believe there was some reconciliation that took place that led to healing. I remember years ago there was a brother who felt that there was a way to do things and to make things happen because he was very passionate and strong about his belief on how things should happen. But I also remember this same brother coming to grips with that, knowing that what he had done and how he had done things had hurt people, had hurt individual people. And I remember on a Sunday morning after the sermon, this brother coming forward and sharing with the church how he had hurt this individual. And he called that individual out by name. And that individual came up to the front. And that individual, those two brothers shook hands and they hugged each other. And I remember all of us that were here on that day had tears in our eyes as we watched that beautiful moment of reconciliation. Church, the way we do conflict resolution in here will have implications on what goes on out in the world. When we settle disputes, it makes for a better relational journey. Abram and Lot relationship and conflict resolution may be the reason that Abram jumped into action on Lot's behalf. In chapter 14, you have to go and read the story. The text says that Lot was kidnapped, and they had took Lot, took his family, took all of his stuff. Word got back to Abram that something happened to his bro, and Abram jumped into action, and he said, no, we about to go get my bro, man. And he assembled a crew, and they went down, and they rescued Lot. There was some bloodshed, I'm sure, that took place. But because blood is thicker than differences, Abram and Lot were able to discover that they had a bigger fight to fight against a common enemy. You see, when we start getting relationship right in here and we start resolving conflicts over medial and trivial issues in here, we can join together and fight some real fights, church. We can fight some real enemies, church. When we start getting together and resolving some conflicts, when we lay aside possessions of our grudges and lay aside possessions possessions of our identities such that it gets in the way of us working together and resolving some conflict. When we do that, we can do some things together, fight some common enemies. When we see that blood is thicker than our differences, we will be positioned to rescue one another and serve one another and carry one another's burdens. I told you all that I was building a playlist. I want you to build a playlist. It'll be a diverse list of songs here. I want to go to the 70s here. How many of y'all remember the 70s song by Dave Mason, We Just Disagree? How many of y'all remember that song, you know, the lyrics? So let's leave it alone, because we can't see eye to eye. There ain't no good guy. There ain't no bad guy. There's just you and me, and we just... I want to sing. There's just you and me, and we just disagree. Why is that so hard for us to grasp in the 21st century? Why is that so hard for us to grasp on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram? Guess what? We just disagree. Ain't no good guy, no bad guy. We just don't see eye to eye. We just disagree. I want you to add that to your playlist. Last week was Beautiful Things, and this week, We Just Disagree. Let that song, let that chorus in particular, the guy that wrote that song wrote it. It was about a couple that was arguing, but he said he wrote it having in mind disputes that they were having in the band. The point is this: when we can just say we just disagree, man, we can make beautiful music together. We can do some beautiful things together. I would argue that the impetus behind many of Paul's writings was that very thing. Why did Paul write the book of Romans? Because there were a bunch of Christians there that disagreed. Why did he write Corinth? Read the text. He'll tell you. I got a letter from you, and y'all disagree about a bunch of stuff. Why did he write Galatians? Because they were disagreeing. Why did he write Ephesians? Because they were disagreeing. Why did he write Philippians and Colossians? Because there were disagreements. And Paul wrote over and over and over again that it's so important that you not let these disagreements tear you up. Resolve these conflicts. Do life together, because there is a greater mission at hand than the color of the carpet or what time you do church or what song you sing. There are bigger issues. In the book of Colossians, as I close this morning, chapter 3, starting at verse number 8, this is what he writes to the church in Colossians. He says, but now you must get rid of all such things, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive language from your mouth. I would say that that's probably the source of a lot of conflict. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self and with its practices, and have clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge according to the image of its creator. In what renewal there is no longer Greek, and Jew, and circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is in all, Christ is all and in all. So as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with the love which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which you indeed were called into one body, and be thankful. And let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teach and admonish one another in all wisdom, with gratitude in all your hearts. Sing psalms, hymns, spiritual songs to God. Look, the remedy that is just inescapable for us all to understand, that the reality is this: we want to become better at resolving conflict. We have to be consumed in Christ. We have to bathe ourselves in Christ. We have to be willing to have the mind of Christ that Paul said, let this mind, in your relationships, let this mind be in you. Christ, who considered equality with God, something not to give up, but he gave that up for other people. And sometimes our positions, our attitudes, our opinions, sometimes we need to give that up in pursuit of better relationships with each other. That's how we're going to resolve conflict. Abram could have said, hey, Lot, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to choose where it's good, is more green, is more, I'm going to take the better lane and you go that way. I'm your uncle. I get first dibs. But Abram did the opposite. He said, hey, little bro, you pick and I'll go the other way. Sometimes we have to give up in pursuit of the relationship. The only way for us to be better at resolving conflicts that we have in the body of Christ, in our families, in our communities, is for us to bathe ourselves in Christ. We're going to sing a song just right now that speaks of that very thing. A call for Christ to just be above us, behind us, before us, beside us, just that he would consume us. It's the way we're going to be better reconciled in our relationships is when we see each other through the eyes of Jesus. Doesn't mean that we won't have conflicts. Doesn't mean that we won't have disagreements. Sometimes we just won't see eye to eye. There's no good guy, no bad guy. We just disagree. There are bigger fish to fry. There are bigger missions to accomplish. And some of the pettiness that we find ourselves in. And this is on full display on social media. Oh, I can't wait till we start talking about the social dilemma. The social and how it's destroying us. And how we can reverse it. But for right now, maybe you possess some grudges. Maybe you possess some things that make it hard for you to live with the person you're sitting beside or the person you live beside or the person in your Facebook friend list that is on a polar opposite political spectrum than you. I'm calling you to be consumed with Christ. Hear the words of Paul writing to the Colossians. Lay aside malice and envy and anger. And pick up compassion and humility, service and love. As we sing the song, if there's a way that we can be helpful to you in the body of Christ through prayer, through conversation, through Bible study, by giving you whatever you need to have a better relationship with Christ, we ask that you come as we stand and sing.